You're welcome back. European leaders are meeting in Brussels this afternoon with a packed and challenging agenda. The summit comes a day after Donald Trump insisted that his plan to bring peace to Ukraine remained on track, despite considerable international scepticism. At the same time, Israel's bombardment of Gaza has been continuing, with the Gazan Health Ministry saying at least 85 people have been killed today. Talking to reporters ahead of the summit, Micheál Martin spoke about securing peace for Ukraine, but also said the latest airstrikes on Gaza were shocking and had to stop.
Looking forward to hearing from President Zelensky in terms of an update on the current situation vis-a-vis talks to enable a substantive ceasefire leading to a fair and lasting and sustainable peace. We've also worked on the wording in relation to the war in Gaza, deploring the shocking bombing that has occurred over the last 48 hours leading to the deaths of so many innocent people, and the statements yesterday from Israeli leaders, particularly in terms of Minister Katz, seem to me to amount to collective punishment of the Palestinians within Gaza. It is quite shocking. It needs to stop. And Europe needs to say stop to the killing and to the slaughter that's going on in Gaza at the moment. And we do also need a release of all hostages. And we need to move very quickly to phase two of the ceasefire, which was originally agreed and which should be complied with.
That was the Taoiseach speaking this morning. Let's go now to Brussels and our Europe editor, Tony Connolly. Tony, there's a lot for leaders to talk about, but what's the main focus of this summit?
I think the main focus, Rachel, is defence spending, because we've had this white paper on defence published yesterday by the European Commission, which is a watershed moment, I think, in how member states will approach defence. Now, what they're talking about there in specific terms is a 150 billion euro loan programme from the European Union, something similar to what happened after COVID. So member states could avail of those loans to boost defence spending. There's a range of capability gaps at EU level. NATO has been doing something similar. So things like satellite warfare, long-range, deep precision missiles, air defence systems. These are areas where Europe lacks capabilities, and that's where the money most likely will be spent. There's also going to be a relaxation of the fiscal rules so that member states can borrow and they can push those limits up by 1.5% if they're spending on agreed capability expenditures in the military sector. So all in all, this could amount to an overall fund of about 800 billion euro over 5 years. And that timeline is significant. They believe that that's the timeline in which Russia will have recovered its own capabilities after the Ukraine war and will then pose what is regarded as a serious threat to some Eastern European member states, especially if Russia is, in a sense, victorious in the Ukraine war.
Where does Ireland fit into this move towards greater militarisation?
Well, it's probably fair to say that this is not geared towards a member state like Ireland. I mean, this is really geared to the large member states who have large militaries who really need to catch up. I mean, Ireland obviously has its own parallel objectives in terms of maritime defence and in terms of radar. There are programmes in place. Obviously, we've had the report on the defence forces. We have the programme for government saying that Ireland will move up to level two ambition by 2028, beyond that level three. And also, Ireland probably doesn't need the fiscal space to borrow to meet its defence expenditure needs. It can borrow cheaply if it needs to. So this is not probably a great fit for Ireland. But obviously, going forward, if in future there are greater peacekeeping obligations on Ireland and they do need to boost armour and so on, then there could be a role to play here. But I think for the short term and the medium term, this is really geared to countries in Eastern Europe. Countries where, like Italy and Spain, where they haven't been spending anywhere near the NATO prescribed amount, which is 2% of GDP. And obviously, Donald Trump wants that to go higher, maybe up to 5% of GDP.
Volodymyr Zelensky isn't at this summit today, but he is due to address leaders, I understand.
That's right. He's in Oslo at the moment. He's meeting the Prime Minister there. He had been in Helsinki yesterday, and he's going to be addressing, well, he was due to address leaders this morning by video conference, really updating them on his phone call yesterday with Donald Trump, what's happening with this ceasefire process with Russia, what he believes Ukraine's needs are going to be in the meantime. Again, a lot of focus here on accelerating Ukraine's accession process so that Ukraine could perhaps join by 2030 if the merit-based process has been fulfilled. But really, given the wobbles brought about by the Trump administration on support for Ukraine, there is a real sense of urgency, both on the military and political front, that Ukraine has to be supported in the meantime.
Stay with us, Tony, because Micheál Martin was also asked by journalists about the threat of tariffs from the United States, and we can hear what he's been saying.
I think the sensible thing is to await what package is announced by the US on the 2nd. And what I said earlier about being strategic, obviously in certain areas we enjoy a significant surplus, such as in food like butter or alcohol and so on. But there's a broad range of sectors, and I think we need to be careful not to be dragged on every individual sector, and Europe needs to be unified in response. So therefore, I think what's important is we see in the first instance, because no one actually has seen the package that the US may produce on the 2nd. And I think it's wise that Europe is giving itself some time after the 2nd of April to assess the EU package and then to wisely and strategically respond and obviously endeavouring to protect all European industries insofar as we possibly can. Remember, the European Union doesn't want tariffs. The European Union hasn't initiated any tariffs. And the European Union believes, and Ireland does as well, that tariffs are bad for business.
Tony, Donald Trump's broader tariffs against the EU, as we were hearing there, they aren't due to be announced until the beginning of next month. But in the meantime, what are leaders doing and saying?
Well, the European Commission responded, within hours of the steel and aluminium tariffs coming into effect on the 10th of February. It was later than that, but they were announced on the 10th of February, and those were essentially reviving tariffs that had been suspended during the first Trump administration on things like bourbon, denim, Harley-Davidson motorbikes, really trying to target consumers in those red states where people vote for Donald Trump. So that has been essentially rolled over. But we are getting signs of fraying unity at EU level because Donald Trump has threatened 200% tariffs on European spirits and wines. And there are genuine concerns in wine-producing countries in the EU that the tariffs on bourbon, for example, should be reconsidered. The European Commission has an exhaustive list of individual products that could be targeted in terms of a response. Those lists are kept, as you can imagine, very secret because the moment you start talking about one product or another, then that opens you up to specific retaliation, and that's a process that's being gone through at the moment. The EU does have what's called an anti-coercion measure, which is really the big bazooka in terms of trade. They can hit all sorts of things that are coming from the United States if they believe tariffs are deliberately political in nature. We haven't got that far yet.
Tony in Brussels, thank you very much for that.